So I was talking to Bill. Are you familiar with the podcast Blowback? Have you ever heard of it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. These two journalists from New York have done, I think this is the fifth season, they do these 10-episode comprehensive sort of histories of different places in the world that the U.S. has fucked with in some fashion. So they've done Afghanistan, Iraq, Cuba, Korea, and this season is Cambodia.
Okay.
So I listened to the whole thing, and afterwards they put up all the interviews they do, because they travel to Cambodia. They put all their interviews and up as bonus episodes. So there's a two-part, it's only one part, excuse me. There's a one-part episode with Cy Hirsch, the famous journalist Cy Hirsch.
Yeah.
And the first question they ask him is, Noah asks him, do you remember when you found out that we were bombing Cambodia illegally? And he basically says, there's no real like moment where I found out about it, but the way it transpired was like this. I was at the AP covering the Pentagon in the late 60s, which made me think of Randall Chase. I was like, you know, and he had some sources at the Pentagon. And then when he started at the New York Times in May of 73, he was getting this information that this general, Lavelle, had been demoted and made to retire. He uses the word cashier, which is an old-fashioned word, which I liked. I liked that they used that word. And so he was trying to hunt this guy down, Lavelle. And he talks about how he did it, and he met him at his country club in suburban Virginia. And he basically found out that he was demoted for bombing targets off the list. So he's like, yeah, but if you did it, why didn't they court-martial you? He's like, well, why do you think? So he started putting this stuff together and saying, I can't believe he took the fall for Kissinger, and he couldn't say anything about it and all of this stuff. But he's talking about the Times, and he's talking about, it's just starting out at the Times. I have to read this. I sent it to Bill, because this is sort of sets the scene. He said, I was only at the Times a month or two. I was sort of, you know, their commie reporter writing about the war, in opposition to the war, as opposed to what most of the people at the Times thought. I think they were more or less neutral about the war, whatever that means. I thought that was pretty funny. So, he writes the story, and he says, you know, back in the day, and I guess the Sunday Times still has Week in Review, and he's talking about how he was able to work 5 or 6 years at the Times doing the kind of work that he does. And it made me think about a conversation that we've always had. Like, every paper in the country used to have, like, an editorial board and people who wrote op-eds. And we give you, like, context about the stories. Like, local stuff, too. They, you know, would write op-eds about, you know, this or that, news journal everywhere. And now you gotta get the podcast now. You can't do that anymore. This is the only place you get it, really. You don't get commentary anywhere else. So, I found that very interesting. But
we're contributing to the dialogue.
We're in the discourse right now.
We are.
We've interjected ourselves into the discourse. In the shadow of Rockford Tower, behind enemy lines, in the belly of the Delaware Way Beast. This is Rob. This is the Highlands Bunker Podcast. Hello. We are in the studio today with our crew. The unassuming assassin, K. Forster Stomberg, is here behind the board. W.C. Martin Esquire. Bill, how are you?
Excellent. Good afternoon.
And joining us today is the editor-in-chief of the local independent news source, Spotlight Delaware, Jake Owens.
Hey,
how are you?
Thank you so much for having me.
So Spotlight does not have a moratorium on coming on the podcast.
I guess
if they did have a moratorium, you'd be making the moratorium, so I guess it's fine.
I reached out recently, said long-time listener, first-time caller, and kind of like you said on the intro, it's rare to have really great local commentary, and so you guys have been a part of my Friday morning commutes for a while now.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it. Yeah, I mean, frankly, I wish there was more of it. Well, it took us a while, and we talked about it, I think, last week or 2 weeks ago, for us to, like, get a little, like, for people to realize that I wasn't going to stop doing this. Like, Carl's going to keep continuing to put this on the internet, and we're just going to shove it down your throat until you take it. I think, you know, when the papers used to do it, it was legitimate by the imprimatur of the paper. It was like, oh, this person's hired by the paper. They're writing this commentary. I think this person's a crackpot, but okay, I know who this person is. We needed to do like 4 years worth of work for everybody to do that. But that's fine. That's fine. No problem.
Welcome aboard.
Yeah. I made it to the discourse. before we start, can you give, because the model of Spotlight is a little bit different. We've talked about it a little bit because obviously we read it. Obviously, we're huge fans of Kay Baker. I worked with Allison, who sort of, this was a growth out of her idea of local independent journalism. So why don't you give people the rundown and the pitch and sort of explain what the model is.
Yeah, I appreciate that, and I appreciate you guys reading. And so Spotlight Delaware is really kind of a project that's grown out of a need that our founder and CEO, Allison Taylor Levine, really recognized a few years back. She's, one time back in the 90s, was a News Journal reporter herself. Her late husband, Jason, was an editor-reporter at the News Journal for many years as well. She's acutely aware of kind of the decline in the number of local reporters at the very least, and what impact that has on the greater community and ecosystem. So she started really kind of pulling together some money, trying to fundraise for this idea of what we could do in a 21st century news organization, and really chased after this nonprofit model that you've seen really proliferating across the country. Look at, we were just spending time out in Texas this summer with Texas Tribune, a really great nonprofit newsroom out there. You look at The City in New York City or Cal Matters out in California. There's a whole number of really great nonprofit newsrooms. And so Allison kind of used those as a model as to what we wanted to do here. So, you know, starting basically last January, she was employee number one just after the new year. And she convinced me to leave my last job and join this venture late last year. And so I was employee number two, like January 24th of this year. And we've since staffed up. We now have a staff of 11. And, you know, we're committed to this idea of free access to news. We think that having accurate and insightful information helps inform the public and helps them engage with their democracy and their government. And so it's been an exciting kind of different take. You know, we can get into the pieces, but I don't want to ramble as well.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's what's excited me about it, because we have another group that, to a smaller extent, you know, we did the Delaware
That's right.
Call, and so we can, you know, we don't have that kind of resources, but we can focus on a few different things. Like, we cover the corporate amendments. We can do sort of longer stuff. Carl's done a lot of stuff about labor and housing and stuff like that. So, you know, I love the model of it, and I'm glad that it's sort of like, I think it's taken off. I mean, Bill, I know Bill reads it every day too. When Carl got hired, I knew it was serious.
Definitely.
Let's be honest. You see Kay Baker, you're like, okay, there's this is serious business.
he applied, and we were very excited that he applied. We had some conversations with him, and he at the time was kind of running this side blog and kind of doing it on his own. We said, you know, let's give you a team, let's give you some resources, let's get you involved. And you know, investigative work is one of our hallmarks, and you know, we kind of put our work into three buckets. You know, Allison went out and did a survey of the public and news readers and kind of asked them, what is it that you feel like you don't have enough information about? They came back and said three things: government accountability, which is basically our investigative work, as well as land use and public education, which, you know, the state is growing like crazy right now. Public education's not doing great right now. All three of those are really areas that we see some need to be able to come in and help out. And you know, we're excited. You know, Kay Baker was our first hire there. He did great work right out of the bat. We followed him up with Jose Ignacio Castaneda Perez, who's a former News Journal reporter, bilingual, Mexican American, came back from reporting at the border to cover Hispanic communities and really minority ethnic communities around the state in whole. And we've since followed them up with a trio of what I like to lovingly call our youngins, who are just hungry and good and very excited. Nick Stonecipher, you guys have probably seen some of his reporting on the opioid fund.
And clamming.
And clamming. He's our principal land use guy.
We're in the tidewater. This is what we're going to get.
That's right. Yeah, he spent the whole day out on a clamming, like a tiny little clamming boat with Dirk Moore.
I listened to
shirtless
that.
Dirk Moore, which is awesome.
Yeah, I have to say, that's one of those where, like, Jordan Howell is good at this when he writes or tells a story. Like, you really feel, like, you picture it there. You're like, he's just on this boat with this guy, Dirk.
Yeah.
You're like, I love this.
What a perfect name for the character in your story. And, you know, Brianna Hill has come in. She's done a great job really getting into city council. The council people are starting to know her name when she's calling, which is always a good sign. And Julie Marola has been doing a great job kind of getting into and helping families explore public education. So we've got more opportunity than we know what to do with.
Yeah, I really appreciate the idea, and I know you guys have done this around the state. And sort of just go out somewhere one day at a library and say, come in all day, tell us what you got, like what's cooking, you know, and just hang out. You've done 100%. It two or three times, and I think that that's a really cool idea. I hope that, you know, and you do it at libraries where people have access. I hope people are coming out to that and seeing that and taking advantage of that opportunity to go and say, yeah, you're not covering this thing in my community. And you can kind of pick at it and say, oh, yeah, you know what? We're not, actually. Yeah. So I appreciate that. That's pretty cool.
It's funny because we call that our community engagement work, and that's really kind of baked into the mission for Spotlight, which is this whole idea that journalism over the years has gotten away from a two-way conversation. We really kind of only hear in today's traditional journalism from our leaders and the advocates and the people that send us emails and make phone calls. And that kind of becomes the news instead of going out to, you know, town council meetings in Smyrna or Leipzig or wherever and, like, spending time with locals. So we generally spend, like, 30% of our month, like, out in the community doing something. So whether it's the pop-up newsrooms, to start the year we did a listening tour where we hit 16 cities around the state. Just spent 90 minutes with about two dozen locals, and every one of these I spent a Saturday morning in Harrington meeting with people at the local library. We were in Milford, we were in Seaford, we were in Rehoboth, all the way up, you know, through Wilmington and a couple places. And Dirk Moore's story came from a listening session like that. Our pop-up newsroom at Route 9 turned into some of the coverage about the parks situation and environmental justice over there. That's been some of our best read content, and it's stuff we only learned because we spent time in their communities. So,
I noticed you mentioned the Texas Tribune. I read the Texas Tribune. I love the Texas Tribune. But it's interesting because I think, I don't know if you guys read it or are aware of it, they take a fairly, you know, they're to the left. You know, they're a progressive sort of news source, which is, I always looked at them too because I feel like that's kind of what the call is.
Sure.
But I'm just going to go back to the Cy Hirsch thing about being more or less neutral, whatever that means. Like, you know, you're taking the straight, you're taking sort of the neutral ground, the old school sort of like, we're going to give you the facts and try to give you some context, but really the context is narrow, and we don't have you know, sort of an opinion section or letters to the editor or anything like that.
Right.
I mean, so it was interesting that you said. But you look at the Texas Tribune and say they're a successful model, but it's not the same framework, really, I don't think. Would you agree that the Texas Tribune is?
Yeah, and it's funny because we went to this event called TribFest out there, the Texas Tribune Festival, it was really, they do a great job, and it's grown over the years. It's been like 15 years running or something. They draw like 30,000 people out to this, and they had the headliners this year were Gretchen Whitmer, Glenn Youngkin. They had Carl Rove there. You know, he was like, Liz
like
Cheney was there.
Punchbowl News.
Yes, Punchbowl. Punchbowl was there.
Punchbowl News.
Oh, really? Yes, Punchbowl was there.
Look,
there
I told you guys didn't. You got when I brought
2025. We're going.
When I brought it up, you guys laughed at me. You said
it's true.
This doesn't exist. And I said it does exist.
And it's funny because, you know, it was an engaging, but it was funny because you mentioned kind of the you know, the presumed slant or whatever of the Tribune, and they started every session with this like promo message from a Texas celebrity that said, like, you're going to hear things that challenge your ideas, and, you know, we hope that, you know, you engage in civil discourse. But then almost every one of their really major headliners was geared maybe towards the left or the center right. There, you know, there was no MAGA Republican types, and so it's kind of like you're not really engaging both sides in an earnest debate. So we're not necessarily trying to. I'd say that we try to. It's a tough thing to talk about, like to what degree opinion and slant should affect your reporting. And Carl and I talk about this. Carl Baker and I talk about this a lot, and we just basically say the truth has to be our guide star, and we got to stop worrying about Republican, Democrat, and just let kind of the facts be.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. I feel like if you cover, which Carl Baker does, you know, stuff like the port and the labor action, support the longshoremen, obviously, out on strike.
Obviously.
I mean, you don't have to if you don't want to. Yeah. You can stay neutral, whatever that means. you know, whatever you want to do. We support the workers. You can just tell the truth. That's fine. You can tell the truth that I support the workers. I always looked at it like the issue is that if you're savvy and you're just a news reader, you know people have political views.
Of course.
So does it mean more to sort of just go with it or to pretend that you don't? Like, do you think you gain more trust by pretending that you don't or by saying, you know, this is where I'm coming from. You can challenge me, like maybe we do at the call, say, for example. I'm happy to get people yelling about it, but I'm not going to pretend like if I don't think there are two sides to the story, I'm not going to pretend that there are.
And may I append maybe just like a sub question onto that?
Please.
I'm thinking about your prior history at Delaware Business Times,
of course.
And I was wondering, just like objectively, do you think that there's a slant there, and do you think that is something that you could reflect on while talking about the spotlights of the state, the news journals of the state, and the DBTs?
I think that everybody has a slant to some degree. I think that all journalists will tell you that they're slantless. You know, we're completely objective.
But nobody buys that. That's what I mean.
But nobody
it
buys
makes you
that.
Kind of sound a little bit silly, actually, I think. That's what I always thought.
The question, I think, is, and I appreciate the question kind of about legacy media and you know, what the slant is. I mean, like, it depends on the structure and the organization of the newspaper, the news organization, and how much influence leadership on down has on what the direction is. And there are outlets where that direction is much stronger than others. And
Delaware Live. Excuse me. Pardon me. Sorry about that.
I thought it was Delaware Live. Yeah. I thought it was like
Delaware.
Yeah, like it's just
okay. Delaware Live. That makes more sense. Okay.
Which again, I don't know. Just a little aside here. An elected official is no longer running that place, which I always thought was weird. He's out now. Shoop. I always thought it was weird that we had a reactionary Republican politician running a newsroom. That was always
it's confusing because a lot of like I guess during the campaigns, a lot of candidates like start their own fake newspaper sort of advertisements. Which whatever, fine. People pick them up, but. It's like confusing because, like, Mr. Shoop, what is it? Is this your campaign newspaper, or is this like an actual? Is this just a website that makes my browser crash? Sorry.
So I think that there are room. There's room for more overtly mission-based media, and I think about the call. You know, you guys don't shy away from the idea that, you know, you're supportive of progressive causes. But I don't think that necessarily detracts from Jordan's reporting or, you know, or Carl's commentary, your commentary, or, you know, and that is the challenge these days is kind of what is editorial content, what is truth. It's somewhat superfluous. You try to leave things at the truth and walk away. And I know that's kind of a squishy answer, but.
Well, I will say this. There is an award given every year for commentary by the Delaware Press Association.
Of course.
And last year, let's be honest. We're here. Everybody's here.
Right,
this is like a quorum of winners. I'm not going to say. I feel like Kanye. I'm not going to say who won. I won. number two actually was a reflection upon old reformers on Tom Carper's retirement by Carl Stomberg. And number three was something that you wrote. I don't remember what it was, though.
I don't remember. it would have been my DBT day.
Yeah, it was definitely DBT.
I don't know, you must have bested me because I think I won the year before you for my editorial on immigration reform and how that fixes our workforce.
Yeah,
issues.
So there is. So I guess I like how I threw that in there, but there is some commentary to be had. But again, if you look at it, you know, it's not coming from legacy media. It's not coming from, you know, the News Journal or one of the radio stations or even really the Cape Gazette or
yeah.
Like, it's not coming from there, and so it takes a lot more to gain sort of, like, credibility when you just look like somebody who started your own thing.
Of course.
This is kind of what we're sort of getting into.
To defend legacy media just a tad, one of the big, when I look at kind of why we're in this episode of media that we're in today, it really in many ways dates back to the launch of CNN, the launch of cable news, where we've gone from trying to inform to now trying to kind of sway opinion, or at the worst, just kind of speak in siloed support to one set of opinions or not, instead of engaging in debate. And unfortunately, the public, I think, gets most of its news from TV. And when you go to even a well-intentioned editorial board, and I saw this when I ran newspapers in Maryland. My number one complaint from people was never about anything we wrote. It was about our syndicated columnists and whether they supported the Republican or the Democrat. And I'm like, I didn't submit this. I had nothing to do with what the Washington Post columnist sent me today. And I had so many people saying, I'm canceling my subscription because of what stuff, what trash you're putting in your paper. And I'm like, I don't even put that page together, but they would cancel local subscriptions.
Well, and that's what I was going to say too. There's two parts to it. There's an idea that we're going to drive some ideology, like right. maybe like a Fox News or MSNBC too. But the biggest part is we just want to hold. It's not that you go there for 30 minutes to hear them tell you the news.
Right.
They're trying to hold your attention and give you all the they're just selling you a bunch of garbage
advertising dollars.
And so yeah, I mean that's you have to get away from that model to be able to do. To be able to do anything, because it's not, and this is my criticism of the News Journal. Like, I understand, and you mentioned it earlier. We'll talk about like really looking at like at the metrics and being like, look how many clicks this got. Like,
yeah.
if you're dealing with the truth and you're trying to tell stories that are being ignored, I mean, hopefully you can find some of them that drive clicks, like some of the
right.
ones you mentioned.
Yeah.
But sometimes they're not going to, and that's just tough shit.
Nope.
You know, we get. You know, however many people listen to this podcast every week, maybe 700, sometimes thousands, sometimes not. But, like, I don't care.
Right.
I don't really. I just found out that for the last year, there have been people becoming patrons, but you can become a free patron on Patreon now. There's, like, 25 of them. I had no idea they were there. Because I don't care.
It. Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to. And I've said this before, like, it's not that we don't know what to do to get 5,000 downloads in a week. I know what to do,
mm-hmm.
But I'm just not going to do that all the time because I don't want to. It's not the goal. It doesn't make me feel good, and it wasn't why we did this to begin with.
And that is the reason why, in my opinion, for-profit media has so many struggles. It's because the first thing I told Allison when I joined is like, look. We have two missions here, really, is to do the best, most high-quality work we can possibly do that we feel the state's missing out on right now, and to make this thing sustainable, because I can't feed my children my morals. I can't, like, just, you know, feel good about myself and go home and pay my mortgage and everything else, so we got to find a way to make this sustainable. And that is the challenge, and that's why so many for-profit medias kind of chase the lowest common denominator to get clicks or, you know, to sell impressions or to do what they need to do to get by. And, you know, look, you scale like Gannett has, and they took on, like, billions of dollars in debt
right.
to do it. The banks are going to come calling. You got to figure out a way to, you know, you either got to sell stuff, you got to cut staff, or you got to raise money, and raising money in this environment is tough. So.
Well, I've kind of noticed that, like, a Gannett publication like the News Journal, they have sponsored content, which I just know not to click. Like, I'm fine with it. Like, yeah. That's how they
sure.
have yeah. to pay their journalists.
Plus,
at the end of the day.
There is sponsored content over there.
You would be shocked how often people do click.
I know. And that's not to make myself sound like smart or anything, but it's like it's generally marked. But they also have, like, sort of a non-sponsored Spawn Con, and I'm thinking, like, off the top of my head, like, stories about the Great Wolf Lodge or the Jimmy Allen sagas, that it's like, or whenever there's like kind of a dumbass poll, like Delaware placed 20th in the, in like, I don't know, financial literacy.
My least favorite things in the world.
Yeah. Or they're even dumber than that. It's like, how many Delawareans can name all 30 MLB teams or something? I don't know. And they'll do like a story about it. That is, I guess, clickbait. That's engagement. That's like another, it's not sponsored content, but it's just like lowest common denominator slop, like you said.
It's Gannett, and not just Gannett, many of the large for-profit media-driven company, and, you know, hedge funds are now involved in a lot of them, like a Digital First Media and some of the others. They have whole teams that watch social media metrics and see what's trending, and then they tell the team, go write something on whatever that is.
That makes sense.
Because they know it's at a hot moment, it'll drive, you know, 10,000, 20,000 clicks, and that's, you know, most of these scaled up businesses sell by what's known as impression, meaning the more clicks that you can amass, the more you can sell your advertisers. It's either that or share of voice, which is if you don't get that many clicks, you can sell 40% of whatever your volume is. And that might just be a few hundred clicks, you know. So it's kind of two different models. With big papers, they tend to sell impressions, and therefore they chase, you know, big clicks.
Now, are you guys chasing something other than clicks?
Yeah, so we, like, it's funny because that was one of my first questions, Alice. We went out for dinner before I even said yes, and I was like, okay, how are we measuring success with this thing? I was like, because if it's chasing clicks, like, I don't really want to be a part of that. We're taking a lot of risk to build this startup, you know. Startups don't always make it. So, you know, you're asking me to kind of leave a job to go take this job. What does success look like? And when I saw the grant metrics, like, they don't really talk about, you know, you need 400,000 clicks this year to be successful, which is fantastic. It's basically, how are we engaging with our community? How are we, you know, how are we empowering them to make decisions for themselves? So you'll see in a lot of our stories, we have direct links where you can email a legislator on a bill. We can track how many times those have been clicked. You know, we can track how many times people hit our, you know, our volunteer buttons. These are some of the things that we're really getting judged against in terms of some of our large, like, grant funding metrics. And then basically the other half of the coin is, look, we got to make good work, and we got to go out and sell it to the public. We do a lot of, we did two kind of VIP cocktails upstate, downstate with, you know, folks that have disposable income to say, can you support good journalism in the state? And a lot of them have, thankfully, you know, helped us in some degree, and we'll continue doing that. We'll get to a point where, like, we hope people just give us, you know, like $10 a month to support the work. But I don't think that we'll have to depend on that writ all to make this thing work. I think it'll always be a smaller piece of the puzzle.
This is a good time to mention that, you know, those people who subscribe for free, you can just throw us $2 you know? A month or $5 a month. And again, I've said this before. Some people, they just want to do it for a year. They give $5 a month for a year, then they dip. That's perfectly fine. Let you know you love it.
It so, pays, you know, Rob's coffee bill, you know, at the very least. So.
Yeah, I mean, look, the price of weed is going down, but there's still a cost involved. So can we, you know, $2, $5 a month, patreon.com/thehighlandsbunker. We'd really appreciate it. Yeah, I mean, I like it. I will say that I do have to laugh every once in a while when I open it and I see that you know, you're trying to get these donations if you appreciate it, because I do know, and thank God you sort of just explained sort of how it works too. You know, Allison had already been tapped into sort of a network of funding through, you know, larger groups that she was affiliated with. And I forget Stuart Comstock A's group, like the Delaware. It just has a very
community foundation,
Delaware Community Foundation. And so Allison was able to lock into that and find funding for what is, by all review now, a great project. So, you know, when the millions were coming in earlier before you guys, I'm like, okay,
you guys,
Allison, you're jamming the millions. That's very good, and it's being spent in a nice way. I don't know if I can send $10 a month to somebody that's getting $1 million grants, but you know, you're doing good work.
And that, you know, you weren't alone. We definitely had some people like, didn't you just get $1 million? What do you need money for me from? And I do like to remind, yeah, so our largest principal funder is this foundation, kind of connected by way of Texas Tribune. They were one of the Tribune's earliest benefactors, is the American Journalism Project, which is a large charitable that's essentially starting and supporting these startup nonprofit newsrooms around the country. So they did give us $1 million over 3 years. Longwood Foundation, which is the DuPont Family Foundation,
I'm familiar,
came back with it.
They're buying Bracebridge now.
There you go.
Hey, they're asking for money as well.
That's right. They're asking for money from the city.
From the city.
Get the hell out.
They have $800 million.
But you know where I learned this? Didn't I learn this in Spotlight Delaware?
There you go.
So again,
did you disclose that relationship though?
We did actually. Yeah, so if you notice at the bottom of every one of our stories, we've actually reported like 4 times on Longwood in the first 6 months. Every time we do disclose, like, hey, look, like they gave us $800,000. I think also over 3 years. So I do like to remind people, like, we don't have $1 million in the bank. You know, they give it to us kind of on a rolling basis to pay payroll. So, you know, and look, we've got 11 people. We've got 6 on the editorial side. We've got 5 people that are basically, we'll have an aggressive event schedule next year, which I'm really excited about. And you know, we need to make this sustainable. So that's a lot of time writing grants, a lot of time going out and asking for larger donations and dollars. And so that whole team is about 5 people. So we have plans on adding like a handful more next year too, and in year 3. So, you know, we're going to be around like 15, 16 people by the time the 3 years runs dry, and we'll see where we are.
Nice. I think, but before we get to the final sort of big discussion about commentary and podcasts,
sure.
Because I didn't even know they were there. I hit that menu on Spotlight. I said podcast.
Yeah, podcast.
I don't listen to any competition.
Beyond the headlines.
I don't listen to any
competition. Yeah, keep it close to like 15 minutes. We don't need a competition in the long form. Just rambling.
If you want real deal, you know where to come. Allison knows how to hit me up. There's just one funny thing we have to talk about. Because I didn't see it at first, but Bill saw it. And during the run-up to the primary, Bethany Hall Long, who lost, is a loser. Mm-hmm. She was ducking. She was running from Chris Barish wherever she could, you know. And then at some point, maybe a month before the primary, it's like the end of the summer at some point, she popped out from under a rock and went on DETV. What was it called? DETV, right? And it was reported on, you know, widely, and I think it was obviously a layup. The thing was like, we know the people, so we're gonna like let you come on and not ask you about shit. And if you want to talk about facts, that's a bullshit operation, because they did a favor for their friend to come in and be on the thing, and they called it friendly. And then you guys wrote what potentially is the most tortured editor's note that I've seen in recent times. Yeah. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. I'm like, it was the most overwrought, tortured thing I've ever seen. They're like, it's friendly in the sense that they ask friendly questions, but the outlet itself, because maybe we know those people, they're not, you know, if you thought, and I'm like, okay, we see what you're trying to say, but I have to tell you that, and I give you the opportunity to talk about it, because we laughed and laughed and laughed.
Yeah, so the word was favorable coverage.
Favorable. And I thought it was friendly. It wasn't friendly?
It was favorable, and I believe it was changed to favored outlet. Because
somebody yelled.
In the end, we felt that favorable was a little bit more of a opinionated terminology, and frankly,
friendly is not, though.
Look, we have been reaching out to the lieutenant governor's office almost every week for months now, and she almost never directly responds to any of our questions, and yet she during that run-up made several appearances on DETV, and it seemed to be the only place that she was making appearances. So I guess I'll leave it at that, and listeners can draw what conclusions they want.
Again, all of this. Draw your own conclusions. We had a conclusion. You changed it. You made it sound stupid. But I understand what you're doing.
Spotlight needed to apply for some of that opioid fund money. See, get that favored relationship.
There's a way you can develop favored relationships.
It's the old Delaware way, unfortunately.
Yeah. That's catching on.
Yeah. I used new Delaware way today in the office, and everybody looked at me like, I kind of like that. I'm like, I got to give credit to Stromberg.
This is a K. Foster Stromberg.
Going to make it happen.
Special. And really, it's I remember the first time Carl sort of explained this, the sort of germ of an idea, and I'm like, that's about right. Yeah, because, I mean, there is a... And it's also a good way for people like us to remind people that everybody's really excited about, you know, we got another great sort of primary result, and a lot of entrenched old Delaware Way people are out. But it's not like we've uprooted the corporate system or anything.
God no.
You know, it's not, you know, we're still
No, but I'll tell you, they're running scared. They really are. It's the number of people I've heard that are like, I don't know what to do with this faction. They don't seem to go away. And it's like, they're not going away. And, you know, we can debate, you know, what the likelihood of success into the future is for the project, as you like to call it, I believe. But
Rob's project.
Rob's project.
It's not my project. It's distinctly not my project. That's the whole point of it.
Yeah.
It's funny because you and there are people sort of outside of the project that understand what's happening, though.
Right.
I think you're one of those people, and there's a lot of them. But the best people are the people who don't understand. And they're like, I don't know what's happening. They're trying to give kids free lunch. This is crazy. They don't like John Carney. Like, no. Like, I love it because it's just like, you're so dumb. Like, we're being very open about, you know, we're not doing anything in secret. I'm talking about it every week, and Carl's putting it on the internet.
Right.
So we haven't really been secretive about it. You just don't want to believe that anybody would think that they don't like it.
Yeah.
Because you're in a Delaware Way bubble, you know. But I think it is funny to watch people sort of come around to it.
Yeah. You were one of the recent podcasts. You and Carl were kind of debating. I think how much progress you guys have made on like the WFP project. And I think the feeling I got was you were thinking that they hadn't accomplished as much as you had hoped they'd accomplished. And I was thinking about that, and I was like, a lot of progressive stuff's been done in the last few years. Think about, you know, paid family leave or even legalization over Carney's objections.
Yeah, but it's not. But like, okay, how many retail marijuana shops are in Delaware?
Well, you know, you got to give it time.
Oh, how many? This is fucking bullshit. This guy, give it time. This is why I'm having these conversations.
Sure.
Like, this is why maybe you were surprised that I didn't think. Like, so yeah, we got minimum wage. Well, we didn't get it yet.
It's been delayed.
Yeah. And we got weed, but we didn't really because we haven't even issued any licenses yet.
Yeah.
Not only is there no retail shops, we haven't issued licenses. The only thing we did do is put a cop in charge of it and make sure that the municipalities all up and down the state can bar it from their municipality. That's all we've really done. So, yeah, I mean, we do a lot of, like, patting ourselves on the back for, like, things that are going to be good in 3 years that are going to apply to, like, a third of the people.
Yeah.
That's not the fucking shit I'm talking about. I'm talking about universal programs today.
Okay.
You know, we have been trained by people like the guy at the Delaware Business Times, John or whatever his name is, Joe, that like they don't understand what you're talking about. I mean, this has a fiscal note. We have to talk about this for 12 years.
Right.
No, we don't. And people don't want to. That's why the Working Families Party part of the project is working so well. Because when you go out and tell people, do you just want to do this? They're like, yeah, can you just do it? Sure. We're going to kick these people out, put new people in, try to do more of it.
Right.
You know, it's not that complicated. As far as progress, like, While I think that the legislative progress has been a little bit exaggerated, we'll say, I do think the electoral progress, even though I'm more sour on it than I was, say, two or four years ago, I think has been
really
incredible.
I'm surprised by that.
Well, we've had too many sellouts. We've had a couple.
We're talking about after election victories. Sure.
Yeah, because that's the issue.
Well, that's like the challenge,
right? And that has been the challenge.
Kate Baker and I were just discussing this today. He was talking about is the progressive wing kind of still on the way up? And I'm like, I don't know. I mean, they've made the challenge isn't so much getting them into office. It's keeping a cohesive block where you guys can exert the power of the project. Because they pull off, Kerry or whoever, and say, we'll give you a leadership position, and that's attractive because now you have more say in the governance, and suddenly the friends get left behind. So if you can be a more cohesive block, that's where the power comes in.
Yeah, and I think that was my point earlier too. Tell me more about this. About this podcast, the Spotlight Delaware podcast. How many episodes are there?
Who's the host? Is it David?
Yeah, so David Stradley he's got like the perfect podcast voice.
He is.
He's like, hey, this is David Stradley. Yeah. I'm coming to you live from the Spotlight Delaware studios in Wilmington,
I feel like
Delaware.
I'm right there.
Yeah. Hey, everybody.
David Stradley is our director of membership and community engagement, so he basically organizes all of our outreach, and he has this unique position where he kind of serves as the liaison between the public and our newsroom, so that if we're hearing concerns from the public, we can get them. And once we've published material, say from an engagement activity, he makes sure to get that back to them. So if we go and take 90 minutes of somebody's night in Seaford, and then we squirrel off, and 4 months later we actually write a story about something they told us, we want to make sure that they know about it so that they don't think they wasted their time with this guy, which has always been, the experience with media is that somebody flies in, you might hear from it, and then you never know what happens to it. Mm-hmm. So he also serves as that layperson voice, and he actually sits in our editorial meetings kind of quietly taking notes. And then at the end, he'll be like, you were talking about this, and I have no idea what that is. Like, explain that to me. And I'm like, because he doesn't come from a journalism background. He used to be director of Delaware Shakespeare Company, which is pretty wild. So this was a real departure for him. And so he's doing a lot of our engagement, our outreach. And so the podcast is part of it. We're 4 episodes in. It's called Beyond the Headlines. You can find it on Spotify and Apple and all of your general things. But it's basically, we break down usually a lengthier story we worked on and kind of give people a look at what does it take to report some of these longer stories.
4 episodes, huh? Well, you know what?
Yeah, we're rolling them out like every other Thursday at this point. So, and they're only running about 15, 16, 17 minutes. So, we're not encroaching on that 60-minute mark.
Right, I'm gonna keep my good eye on this. To be careful.
Well, I think you'd like the episode, Rob. It might be number 3 or 4, but it was Carl Baker and Dave.
It's 3, yeah.
Kind of talk about the primary results. I was a little disheartened to hear Carl say that, like signs win elections. Like, not, he didn't say that like
kinda,
emphatically,
yeah.
But
they kind of do. Though.
I guess we do. That is the thing.
Do they? I mean, what was his rationale? Because here's my.
I think he was comparing, like, also saying that turnout was rather low too.
Turnout was low.
Which, again, I don't think that's a.
In yeah. some case,
we canceled the presidential thing,
right?
And then Biden quit anyway,
right? Right.
But
wasn't a presidential primary. It's just a statewide primary.
Right, but that, I think the presidential primaries, and plus
gets the juices flowing.
Yeah, and plus the even at the top of the Democratic.
You mean Kamala's not getting your juices going?
So. Come on, bro. We'll talk about that at the end. But like we have a coronation of Lisa Blunt Rochester, which will she will behave as Carper behaved. So we have nothing there. Now, from an identity standpoint, we get a younger person, we get a woman, we get a black woman. Who gives a shit? It would be good if her politics were good. Like it's just a matter of politics. Like that's what it is.
Yeah.
And she will basically fill the role that Carper filled.
Sure.
And then Sarah will fill the role that Lisa filled. So like, why would anybody be excited about going out to vote for like the? I actually had the opportunity. I don't know if I said this on the air. I know I said it to Bill. So when I went to vote in the primary. You get all of these at-large. I live in the city, obviously, and sure. You get all the at-large city council in there. So there's like, you have to pick 3 out of 6 or something. I didn't pick any of them. and it's not because I didn't, like, I know a lot of people probably were like, I don't know any of these people. I knew most of them. I'm like, just left it blank. Because there's no, what do you think those people are going to, they're not going to do anything. There were big wins in the city council. Kobe, Christian Willauer, obviously Shanae's already there. But like, I didn't get a chance to vote for them, and so right. Yeah. if they're not part of the, if they're not part of the project, I'm not interested.
Right.
Because I have a project I'm trying to do, and I don't care.
Sure. I respect that in many ways. I mean, you're committed to this idea, and you know.
But did Carl Baker really say that signs? What was his rationale for the signs thing?
I think he may have been referring to the Republican U.S. House race, because we're.
He was referring to a specific.
That was the other thing I
we're still working
from that
on
episode.
The,
was like
still who, working on Waylon, to be honest. We're still trying to piece together how this happened.
Yeah. So apparently, so this will be the. Gentleman running against Sarah McBride,
okay,
correct,
was not the GOP state GOP endorsed candidate. He's kind of like, I'm assuming, ex police officer.
He's a longtime Delaware state trooper, retired.
So he'll get to lose to Sarah.
But
that's the thing, though. Okay, so
Danielle Hall announced her candidacy like 2 years ago. And she's been at every event
years.
She's kind of representative of maybe a new Republican Party. She's a black woman. At least she's a military veteran. She's had like 8 children. She's talked about her family a lot. And really kind of had a concerted vision. Like I said, she was everywhere. And the state party endorsed her. She had like no opponents up until maybe the day of filing. And then all of a sudden, this guy, John Whalen, kind of comes out of the woodworks. And, you know, we tried reaching out to him for our U.S. House debate. He wouldn't respond. He hasn't responded to any media requests that I've seen. He's kind of been a ghost. He finally does have a website.
Is his photo just like a black outline with a question mark?
For a while it was, but now he's got like a full site where you can kind of see him. But it was like...
It's like Mullah Omar of the Taliban. There's just such a grainy photo.
But then, you know, and so then we get to like primary election night. We're already kind of like in our minds thinking about, is there a story about Danielle Hall and Mike Ramone kind of representing a change in tactic for the state Republican Party? And then like, not only does Danielle lose, she loses pretty decisively by thousands of votes statewide. And I think back to a conversation I had with her at one point where she was like, I'm really worried. I'm like, why? Like, nobody's heard of this guy. And she said something to the effect of, like, well, you know, I assumed that, like, if I was the only candidate, I'd kind of shored up my Sussex and Kent base because I'm the only candidate. I'm putting all my effort into making inroads into Newcastle County to try and be competitive in the general. And then, like, right on deadline day, this guy comes in, and I guess he's, like, a Millsboro resident. I guess people know him down there. I can't say that, you know, we've ever really heard of him. And he was a state trooper, I believe, up in Wilmington for a while. He kind of has like this sway. And then she's like, I'm worried I'm going to lose Sussex. And if you lose Sussex as a Republican, like, it's over. And she did. She lost both Sussex and Kent to this kind of grassroots campaign. You look at his campaign website and it's mainly, you know, immigration concerns, you know, security concerns, kind of the party line these days. It was what it was. But one of the things that was interesting about Waylon's campaign is I saw his signs everywhere. Oh. Nobody ever heard of him. Like, when I'm in Middletown, they were all over Middletown. And I was like, I can't say I saw as many Danielle Hall signs out downstate because she assumed she wouldn't need them. So, yeah, in some cases, maybe that worked because people said, oh, well, I've seen that name and I haven't seen hers. So.
I would say, I don't know what you guys think of this, because... I mean, first of all, my vision's very poor. I barely see any of the signs. They all just look like a big fucking blob to me.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't, if I don't know the person, I don't even know what they're running for. So if I saw it or didn't see it, I wouldn't even know.
Yeah.
I do know Danielle Hall. I saw something after the primary where she had like a meltdown. She had an online meltdown. Which, again, I feel bad for people because they throw all this stuff into it and they're working and they're trying. They have their own little project and it doesn't work. And you know, I'm not... And when I said she had an online meltdown, I'm not even kind of making fun of it. I feel bad that happened. But, like, there's a real easy answer for this. The people that vote in Republican primaries are not interested in that. Like, you can say, oh, she did all of this stuff, and sure, she's a black woman, she has a big family. They don't care about that. Like, that's not what they want. Like, this guy's going to get smoked, just like Ramon's going to get smoked. It doesn't matter. Like, you could be a moderate. You could be, I mean, first of all, the Republicans not going to win in Delaware regardless in a statewide race. Yeah. And the Republicans who are win will be, you know, ghosts and lunatics and ex-cops and, you know, freaks. That's what they want. So it's like, I don't think it has anything to do with signage or anything. I think it has to do with racism mostly or just not, they're not interested in a moderate position. They're not interested in that, which is fine. I don't really have an issue with it. I'm not interested in a moderate opinion either, the other side. So I guess I kind of like understand where they're coming from. Like, how many times do we have to go through this before we've demonstrated the fact that they don't want this? Like, we have an idea of what the thing is supposed to be. This person did the work for 2 years, and they did this, and they're trying to shore up their base here, and their name's out there. And we have this idea that that's what they want, and they don't. They just showed you that they
Well, it's the old Delaware way versus the new Delaware way, because there was this assumption that if you were a centrist person, you could kind of play to both sides. You were collegial. You did, you know, you worked your way through the House and the Senate, and you know, you worked your way up through a cabinet position that maybe you'd be ready for lieutenant governor and then governor. You know, you look back at our last five or six guys. This is the process. You either went to Congress, did a couple of years as congressman, or you worked your way through, you know, state leadership. And now you got people like Jack Markell and Matt Meyer kind of bucking that system. And, you know, I the biggest question to me is I look at the Republican Party and I say, is that kind of a harbinger for the future for the Democratic Party? When you look at Christine O'Donnell, when you talk about kind of the extremes on the other side, you know, call progressivism extreme or if you want, but, you know, it's, you know, when you talk about, you know, Christine O'Donnell knocking off Mike Castle, that was kind of the last time Republicans were competitive in this state. And it's been a succession of kind of the same types of candidates in differing forms since, and it hasn't worked. It hasn't been nearly effective enough to be competitive in Delaware, and now the demographics and registrations are escaping them. So
yeah, I mean, that's kind of the point of this whole podcast, is to be like, there are But the things people are saying are happening are really happening. They just don't have any idea why or what it means or like what they should do. They just write op-eds like, what are the lobbyists going to do? Yeah, like they're very confused.
I'm very interested to see what the state house looks like. I mean, we kind of know what the membership's going to look like, but in terms of leadership, you know, we've been reaching out to a lot of folks in the last week, kind of trying to read the tea leaves.
Mom's the word over there.
Where is this leadership races are going come next month? Because that'll tell you a lot about what priorities will be. And, you know, you got a lot of big questions like education funding formulas and everything else on the docket for the next few years. So what does progressivism look like, you know, for that into the future? I don't know.
Yeah, like leadership, what are their priorities going to be? And also urgency. Which 100%. On something I just, since I've been kind of paying attention, I paid attention to this stuff like 20 years ago obsessively, and then I've come back to it now as I've gotten to know these guys. It does feel like the last few sessions, it's just like we're going to wait around for a few months. We get to that January, February break, then there's like another thing, and it kind of destroys the narrative. Any sort of like, I don't know. Any sort of excitement about the upcoming session kind of gets muted rather quickly.
You know, I covered Maryland for about 10 years when I was working over the border, and spent a lot of time in Annapolis with the state legislators down there, and they only have a 90-day session.
Right.
You know, they start in January, they end like first week in April, and it is a sprint. I mean, there's committee meetings every day. There's, you know, often you'll have five or six committee meetings on top of one another that mean something. And then you get to Delaware, it has like this six-month session. There's lots of breaks built in, but those first like 3.5 months don't mean a whole lot, because they're still workshopping bills with advocates, with their own teams, with their lawyer. A lot of times you don't see final draft legislation until like May. And at that point, it's hard to engage from the public standpoint. I mean, there needs to be a more concerted effort. You got 6 months off a year. I know you're a part-time legislator, but come to Dover in January with more bills prepared and be prepared to debate them, discuss them in public.
Yeah, and I think that's by design, though, right? That's a way to gum up the work, slow it all down. Like, oh, could be a fiscal note. We're going to have to go to the joint budget thing to figure out. And so we can't do anything until we figure that out. And then, well, the cops don't like it, so we're going to have to go back to the drawing board. Like, that's all. A lot of that's for show, because there's no appetite to really do anything. That's what I'm interested to see if it changes. Is there going to be an appetite to say, you know, we have 6 months here, we don't have to do it like this, we don't have to slow play everything because we really don't really want that, we're wedded to the status quo and the establishment.
Sure.
So if you are, then yeah, who cares what happens? Maybe we get one thing done, maybe we don't. Like, did they get one thing done last session? I don't think so. They usually do like one thing.
Healthcare cost review board, or arguably.
Oh yeah, that was fun. That was a fun process. Got all the doctors down there, John, take our money.
Yeah, it was a frustrating issue for us. So, yeah.
Well, it was a frustrating issue for you guys.
Yeah, because you know, kind of speaking truth to power, it was like the healthcare lobby had every administrator down there in their white doctor suits making the public think that every doctor in the state's against, you know, against this bill. They hired every lobbyist in Dover that I could find, according to lobbying records. You go there, they packed every house, you know, multiple times over. And yet, when I'm talking to actual physicians in hospitals, they're not against it. When I talk to the insurance industry, they're not against it. When I talk to actual advocates and legislators in Vermont, where we're modeling the system after, they actually think it works. The problem is up there, you know, there's a lot to be said, but a lot of why that system hasn't worked so well is because the University of Vermont medical system has gunked up the works in those sessions, and they're like in legal fights all the time about it. So it's like, yeah, it hasn't been effective because the hospitals are fighting it tooth and nail, which, you know, look, it's your livelihood, it's your business, I expect them to. But I didn't like that it seemed like the only narrative coming out of Dover for those 3 months was like, I don't know why legislators are cramming this down our throats, it's bad for healthcare. And I'm like, the people delivering care are disagreeing with this fairly wholeheartedly.
Yeah, and I think the issue is that, I don't know, Carl probably has a better feel for like the feel down there. But when you bring people in, that part is on the elected officials, because they're notoriously cowardly, and they're notoriously you know, influenced by big numbers and shiny stuff. And they're like, oh my God, I can't believe it. Look at these people. They hate us now. They're not our friends. We thought these people were our friends. Yeah, they have a whole wrong, because they don't look at, the average elected official, I don't think, is thinking about the issue the way that you just laid it out.
No.
They just go to Lake Hall. They see all these people yelling at them. They get scared and nervous because people don't like them now, because now they're mad at me. And it's a whole, like, I mean, we're dealing with a sort of a juvenile mindset. They're not looking at the issues the way that you said.
Can I say the exact opposite thing?
Sure. Yeah, please.
Because using HB 350 as an example, but also two very random ones, the gun bills and the mini bond bill from last year, which included a community workforce agreement pilot project.
Right. Oh, right, yeah, you mentioned that.
ABC did not like.
That thing we talked about, the community workshop, that's a bond bill thing.
That's a bond, mini bond.
They passed that as legislation, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, as the mini bond bill. But and that's just evidence that they actually, it seems like they've grown more responsive. You know, they're not so worried about industry coming in.
And so I think my takeaway is that if you have to bring a large number of people to legislative hall, it means you're already operating from a place of disadvantage. Okay. And I do think there's definitely a cowardly mindset among legislators. I think it's pretty safe to say. But I think there's also a bunker mindset, and not the good one, of like,
can
we're
call
all
something
in
else,
here
please?
Together, we're not colleagues, part of the project. We're working together, and all these crazy people are coming in from outside to like try to get to us, and we're going to hunker down, and we're going to plow through no matter what anybody says. And I think it really depends on who is doing what. There's a lot of internal politics to what wins the day on that. But I think a lot of times, and we've been in this situation too, but if you have to bring in hundreds of people in order to make your point, it usually means that nobody's listening to you any other way. And so I do think that, like, with HB 350, that was a perfect example of that. Was ChristianityCare did everything they could to keep that bill from passing, but because Valerie Longhurst had a grudge against ChristianityCare for reasons that may have been related to Working Families Party that were absolutely mistaken, she was like, no, we're getting this done. And the Senate had already worked on a similar bill in the past. They're like, yeah, we want to get this done. And so when you have House and Senate leadership on the same side, and when Carney came around to it, there's no institutional, like, legislative pushback against it. So what are you going to do?
Yeah, I'm thinking of the same. I'm picking up what you're putting down, because I was thinking about the corporate bill too. I mean, we brought to bear some of the best minds in the country, showed up in Dover.
Yeah,
to talk about, you know, whether they be professors, lawyer, other attorneys, people who write about this stuff, academics, And it was just
this
like
is part of the project. And they,
yeah, and they were just like, yeah, fuck off. We're just doing it anyway because this is what we do.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a little bit of a different situation than the.
Yeah, it's kind of the inverse.
But when they get when they did, they all are also like that bunker mentality, being sort of like stubborn. And we've already decided this. Once they already decide something, it's hard to get them off it.
Right.
That is, I do.
That was a weird Carl's situation right where it was like it was almost the establishment won that one because it's, you know, coming by way of the bar associations, you know, committees and everything.
The establishment wins that. They're undefeated on that.
Yeah, yeah, you know, I mean, but on H3350, they very much did not win that. And I was a little surprised that there weren't greater concessions given from either the House or the Senate. And then ultimately, Carney signed it, like, the day it passed, which was, like, I was, you know, talk about it, kind of an establishment Democrat. And, you know, look, but it's a big voter block,
but maybe,
especially in the city of Wilmington.
But, but maybe they're not. He's a goddamn son of a bitch. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think the idea in 350, if I'm getting this right, Carl, is that like the establishment kind of decided they were doing it. And so for some reason, yeah. Christiana Kare and the lobbyists in this case were actually running up against sort of establishment pressure that they already had decided that this was going to be done for whatever reason, maybe for personal reasons or for political reasons that maybe someone didn't fully understand.
Yeah.
But for whatever, this is the establishment decided that this was a thing, so it didn't matter what.
Yeah, and I think 5 years ago, that wouldn't have happened.
No.
Because I think that's, you know, we go back to the old versus New Delaware. Like, I think, you know, if Senate leadership had already not been trying to get something similar to happen for several cycles, then, like, the momentum would not have been there to, like, lock everybody down that quickly. And if there had been a larger conservative bloc on the Democratic side that could have pushed back more internally, and, like, there could have been actually some worse payback for people in House leadership to try to push something through like that. But, you know, a lot of the policy momentum, even if we're not getting enough done, the policy momentum is still on the left right now. Like, what is the biggest, like, conservative win that's happened legislatively? I would argue Podpat, maybe, but like, the only conservative wins have been like killing certain progressive things that have happened for the most part. Yeah. There's not been any like, oh, we got this big tax cut through or anything like that, or like we gave all this money to other than like the status quo,
right? Yeah, the only conservative stuff's the conservative stuff that already exists.
Yeah,
you know,
so like, I think it's a thing that would not have happened a little while ago, speaking to has there been any progress, but hey, it's good.
No, and I think, well, I mean, I agreed when we talked about it the first time that there has been legislative progress. I just don't want to make it out to be like, because I think what happens in this state, because I've seen people do this.
Sure.
I've seen people like Carney do it to people's faces. Be like, well, we gave you that already when we gave you this other thing. You know, and I don't like that whole, I don't like that attitude, and I think it needs to be called out. You know, I know Carney used to say it about weed before he vetoed it, that he had already given the activist decriminalization.
Yeah.
Or it's happening with police reform. You know, they watered down this bill and just changed the name of Leobor to Podpat, and created a post commission from the thing that used to be copped. So they just changed a bunch of names, and now they've given us that already. It's finished business.
Yeah.
And it's not. Like, we're not, I'm not here to be like, oh, you know what, you did give us like a quarter of what we asked for, so I guess we'll pick it up again in 6 years. Like, I don't think so. I think the times have changed. The wind is blowing in a different direction. And that's the thing I want to kind of get people away from, being like, yeah, you know, we did get something. The minimum wage is going to go up at some point, like January. When did we do that?
Right when it needs to be raised again. Level out, right?
Yeah, so it's just like
how this works.
But the fact remains that, yes, the legislative and electoral momentum is only going in one direction. That's, as you said, we're just looking at facts here. We're just giving you the facts,
and you make
your own conclusion, but this is the facts.
You look at, you know, David McBride, you look at, you know, Valerie Longhurst, you look at some of these, you know, look at Ramon's seat, which is, you know, likely going to be flipping Democratic. You got Republicans upstate like Kevin Hensley and Mike Smith that kind of continue to hang on by the skin of their teeth Democratic districts. You could be very easily looking at a supermajority in both chambers pretty quickly if Democrats or WFP, you know, make some concerted efforts in these areas. So
yeah. And it's just a matter of making sure that at the back end, we get what we wanted at the front end. That's been the trick. So, all right, couple plugs at the end here.
Sure.
Number one, before you give $5 to Spotlight Delaware, you got to go to patreon.com/silencebunker and just sign up for $2 or $5 a month. You don't have to give it the whole time, but, you know, we have actually some plans for next session about sort of taking this on the road, doing some road trips, some recording road trips. Different. We have a couple different
ideas. Do this in
Lake Hall. You know what? Watch what we do. So that would be super. But that also, you know, Spotlight is probably because it's producing regular stuff. It's sort of probably the best thing that we've got going because we're not, you know, there's no you know, you're not covering we're not getting like 900 stories about the Fish concert in Dover. You guys didn't cover that.
We did not go to
now,
the Fish
Festival. I'm sure Kate Baker and some of his friends wanted to probably go to the Fish.
He might have been there. I don't know.
Yeah, we're not. Do you guys sort of track where the different Chick-fil-A's are going to open all the way down the state? Or is that something you guys
actually
are on?
I believe I got a Chick-fil-A notice this morning.
The one
in Newcastle is opening soon for anybody looking for Chick-fil-A.
Okay. You know, I don't know what they're going to put in that strip mall in Smyrna, but I'm sure somebody at the News Journal is going to tell me. But, I mean, we're making light of it, but that's the thing. Yeah. We're at Spotlight, you're getting things that people thought about that you should be reading in some fashion. Yeah. I wish we could have gotten to the education thing a little bit more because I think that's where you need a little bit more context. Like, it would be nice for somebody to come step in and be like, hey, there are these tracks and different things you can do and things. But actually, why the public schools are bad is because of the charter schools. And that's it.
You should ask prior guest Doug Manley to break out his district spreadsheet. Sit down, go over the numbers. I highly recommend signing up for Spotlight's daily email.
It's
great
that.
If you're a fan of like public media journalism, I think you'll feel right at home with Spotlight articles. And I also appreciate how there's a call to action often. Like we mentioned, the Bracebridge. What is it? It's a purchase or it's a donation, I guess, to these.
Yeah, it's a grant from the essentially excess savings that the city sits on year to year, and it's meant to be part of the tax stabilization fund, so to offset future tax increases. But they're proposing to give $10 million to Longwood Foundation
to seal this deal. But I appreciated it because you guys actually link to the city council ordinance that would make this $10 million allocation and email the sponsor, which I think is cool. It's you know, even if you're encouraging like five people to do that, I think that's a big victory and something that the legacy media is not necessarily doing because that would be bias, I guess. Right? Telling you.
I'm telling you how. Yeah, I mean, it's like we don't tell you how to feel about something. We just tell you to make your voice heard and reach out. We give you the direct contact for the sponsor, and you can say. I think I got an email this morning saying like something along the line, I don't know what your problem is. I support this, and I was like, good for you. Tell Michelle that. I hope you email Councilwoman Harley and tell her that. And I hope that if you
The idea is a good one. Like I like the idea of the Delaware Law School and the nursing school being run out of that.
Sense.
Yeah, that's
Ghost
cool.
Town.
That's where all the lawyers are. That's where the big courts are. There's a huge Christiana Care Hospital right there, and then St. Francis is right there. And so if you have like nursing, you know, that part of it makes sense. But it's always like we have to pay for the privilege of doing all this stuff. It's like you got to take them. You have to pay the DuPonts to do it. It's like okay, I don't. You know, come on. I we passed this now, but. In any event. Jake, thanks for coming in. I appreciate it.
No, I appreciate it, and I appreciate the invitation, appreciate the plugs, appreciate you guys reading Spotlight and trying to share us and encourage people to check us out at spotlightdelaware.org.
Cool. And, again, if you need any kind of, like, a little bit more spicy audio on the podcast bit, let me know. I think we can help you out on that.
Always welcome to come back.
All right. Carl, thank you. Thank you for your insights. Bill, thank you for everything you're doing. Yeah, left is best.